Britain. Britain and Europe, Part 1. Time to get closer. Brexit's economic toll is clear, but the path forward is murky.
Few topics in British politics cause quite such a shudder as Brexit. The subject of Britain's relationship with the European Union is polarising, jargon-ridden and, after years of upheaval, rather repetitive. No wonder it barely featured in the recent general election campaign. But Brexit also matters greatly. The Labour Party won power in July, pledging to cure the country's economic malady. Any diagnosis of lagging growth that omits Brexit is bound to be incomplete. Slapping a number on the cost of Brexit is tough. There is no easy counterfactual. Worse, Britain formally left the EU in January 2021 while COVID-19 lockdowns were still warping economic data. Economists' best stab uses a doppelganger model to approximate no Brexit Britain to a weighted average of countries that performed similarly before 2016. That usually lands on a one-off hit to GDP from Brexit of 5%, which is also near the rough 4% assumption of the Office for Budget Responsibility, Britain's fiscal watchdog. That figure may well be a little high. Compared with its closest peers, Britain's growth since 2016 has been shabby, but not uniquely disastrous. Better than Germany, but worse than France, and much worse than the Netherlands or Switzerland. Many countries with similar pre-2016 records to Britain outperformed it afterwards for unrelated reasons. America was supercharged by fiscal expansion. Canada and Australia rode a post-COVID commodity boom. But even a more cautious estimate of around 2-3% of GDP would make Brexit one of the rich world's worst economic blunders. Where is the pain concentrated? The earliest symptoms were in business investment, which flatlined in the aftermath of the Brexit referendum in 2016. Investment didn't start picking back up until 2023 and is still running well below its historical trend. Trade took a hit once Britain formally left the EU, choked by customs checks and regulatory hurdles. Trade intensity, exports plus imports as a share of GDP, has lagged other rich countries mainly because goods trade fell. In the short term, weak trade stifles exporters and lowers choice for consumers. Over a longer timescale, productivity flags, as domestic firms are shielded from foreign rivals and cut out of the European market. The Brexit camp hoped to offset lost EU trade with gains elsewhere. That was always a stretch. The EU covers nearly half of Britain's trade. So far, the takings are meagre. Talks with America have stalled. The few new deals Britain has struck are on the other side of the world, with Australia, New Zealand and the CPTPP, a Pacific trade bloc. Dulling the impact of Brexit is a much easier way of boosting growth. Sir Keir Starmer, shaken by Labour's drubbing in the 2019 election, when Boris Johnson won a big victory on the promise of getting Brexit done, has ruled out the most dramatic sorts of rapprochement, entering a customs union or rejoining the single market. In fairness, so quick a reversal might leave the EU a little perplexed too. Something that Sir Keir has committed to is smoothing out border checks on food with a sanitary and phytosanitary or SPS deal. Farming doesn't make up much of the British economy, but has been hit especially hard by Brexit. On the import side, pulling down supermarket prices would be a welcome boost for households, and an SPS deal would usefully force the government to confront the broader trade-offs that it faces in approaching the EU. The Conservatives mistakenly chose to maximise Britain's theoretical ability to diverge from European regulation, despite the economic cost. But in reality, Britain has barely diverged at all on food, aside from loosening rules on genetically modified crops. For a fully seamless food border, Britain will need to insert European rules into domestic law and accept oversight from the European Court of Justice. An alternative might look like the EU's arrangement with New Zealand, where a lower degree of regulatory alignment translates to less free-flowing trade. For Britain, that is a worse deal, and probably an unattainable one anyway. New Zealand is a far-off market whose shipments arrive in easy-to-monitor batches. Britain is not. SPS is one instance of dynamic alignment, reducing trade barriers by opting in to select EU rules. Aslak Berg of the Centre for European Reform, a think tank, notes that even under the Tories, Britain aligned with the EU in a handful of areas where fully independent regulation wasn't practical, like conformity assessments, that's CE markings. One path forward could be to broaden that approach out to other industries like chemicals or pharmaceuticals. The trouble is that the EU dislikes the idea of Britain cherry-picking bits of the single market. Another EU worry is about future governments backtracking. The Conservatives are stuck in a messy leadership race, but are already gaining in the polls. Why grant a deal that a new government might trash? One helpful model may be deep and comprehensive free trade areas, or DCFTAs, which the EU uses to deal with countries with shakier political institutions, like Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine. These are more flexible than a static deal. The EU monitors regulatory alignments and dials up or down the intensity of border checks accordingly. Plenty of other more minor deals with the EU could also help a little. Visas for touring musicians, linking emissions trading schemes, data roaming, and so on. An agreement on youth mobility, letting Europeans in their 20s move to Britain and vice versa, would be more useful still. Incomers would either work or pay fees to study, would almost certainly lack dependence, and would head back home again well before any risk of becoming a drain on the exchequer. Young Britons would benefit, in turn, from opportunities to live and work in Europe. Britain already has similar deals with Australia, Canada, South Korea and others. Secure has so far rejected this option. That may be a negotiating ploy. Where things might go after that is unclear. Sir Keir has not articulated a vision for where he wants the relationship to settle. Taking time to watch the EU's trajectory is no bad thing. Enlargement deals with Ukraine and others may widen the range of integration models. But a more serious conversation about deeper alignment, including single market and customs union membership, cannot be skirted forever. Public opinion on Brexit has soured. A clear majority of Britons consider it a mistake. Few are keen to reopen the issue of EU membership, but that may shift as post-referendum trauma fades. One lesson of the Brexit vote is that elites cannot ignore public discontent indefinitely. Give it enough time, and Brexiteers may find the shoe on the other foot.